Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't think I mattered much in the world. I mean, I had a great childhood, idyllic even, but my job was just to be a kid, right? I mean, let the grown-ups impact lives and make change for good. Being a kid seemed to me to be about other stuff, riding bikes, climbing trees, reading books, stuff like that. I thought the time for making a difference would come, but come later. Now, today, we've got some stories for you about kids who made a difference when they were kids. And they didn't ask for much fanfare for the difference they made. They just did the thing they thought was right in ways that made a difference, in ways that mattered. First up, a story from Motoko, who will tell us a story about her son and a couple of friends and their desire to dress up as ninjas for Halloween one year. Where did that lead? Well, that's the story. Recorded live in the Appleseed studio, here's Motoko with three ninjas.
Thank you. I grew up in Osaka, Japan, and came to Massachusetts in mid-80s as an exchange student to the University of Massachusetts. And once I got there, I liked it a lot. I decided to live there and raise a family. And now I have a son. I have one son, and his name is Charlie. My son is all grown up now, and I am actually a proud grandmother of a three-year-old, and my granddaughter's name is Ruby. So I became a storyteller first when my son, Charlie, was in kindergarten. I used to go into his classroom and tell his friends stories from Japan. They used to love me. I did that every year, year after year after year, until my son turned a seventh grader when he told me not to show up at his school anymore. In fact, he told me he will never speak to me again if I came. So that's when I started visiting other schools and tell other people's children stories. So my son wrote this haiku. Stealth is my game. In midnight black, I travel for my secret mission. Mom, I want to be a ninja. Hi-ya! My son said when he was in kindergarten, old enough to go on his first trick-or-treating. I was glad and relieved. Glad because I wanted him to be proud of his cultural heritage. I mean, Halloween is not really a Japanese tradition, but I thought it was appropriate for him to want to be a ninja. And relieved because of the dismal lack of my sewing ability. I'm the famous bad wife who, when my ex-husband asked me to hem his work pants, I used the staplers. I know, that was just terrible. But you see, ninja costume is the easiest thing to make. So I got his father's old black t-shirt and cut it straight down the middle so he could pull the edges together like a robe. And I gave him a black scarf to tie around his waist. Another smaller black t-shirt to cover his head, using the neck opening for his eyes, and tie the sleeves in the back. A pair of black pants and black socks, we spray painted his old sneakers black. And the cute little ninja was born. Hi-ya! You must follow the way of shinobi. Courage, honor, and wisdom. I was giving him my own made-up ninja code. Always remain invisible. Never boast of your achievements. Os, hi-ya! So that's what he was every Halloween. Over the years, he added his own touch, a cardboard samurai swords, origami ninja stars, and a white hachimaki headbands with a bright red sun in the middle of his forehead, like the national flag of Japan. So when my son was in fourth grade, he went trick-or-treating with two of his soccer friends, a big shy boy named Carlos and Megan, an athletic redhead with a face full of freckles. I drove my little ninja to Megan's house. Carlos was just arriving too, wearing a Frankenstein mask and a red tie. I rang the doorbell and Megan came to the door. She was wearing this beautiful princess dress, all pink satin and white lace, but on her head was a black witch hat and her face was painted green. "I forgot to tell my mom I wanted to be a witch this year," Megan explained. "So she made me this dress and now I have to wear it." "You should have told me sooner," Megan's mother Karen sounded exasperated. "You always wanted to be a princess before." "It's all right," I said. "There's nothing wrong with being a princess witch. Karen, this dress is amazing. I wish I could sew like that." Well, Megan's house sat on a little cul-de-sac with a dozen or so lovely small homes all around. So the kids' plan was to go around the cul-de-sac trick-or-treating and come back to Megan's house for a candy party. "I know most of my neighbors and it's safe," Karen assured me. "You and I can stay here, Motoko." "Well, I think I'd like to go with them, you know, keep an eye on them," I said, being the helicopter parent I am, ready to hover. "Oh, Mom," my son rolled his eyes. "Don't worry, Charlie. I'll hide in the bushes. Nobody will see me." "Mom, I'm the ninja, not you." So stealthily, I followed the three kids, going round from house to house and always hiding, you know, a little bit in the shadows and watched them fill their bags with candies. Sometimes the people asked, "What are you?" And Megan would say, "I'm a princess witch." And my son would say, "I'm a ninja. Hi-ya." Carlos said nothing, mostly because he was shy, but also because it was obvious. I thought it was funny that nobody asked him why a Frankenstein was wearing a red tie. But we had almost gone around the entire cul-de-sac. There were only a couple of houses left. One was all dark, and it looked as if nobody was home. So we went to this other one, a small single-story ranch with slate-blue shingles. The porch light was on, so I hid behind a little cypress tree near the front door as Carlos went up the steps and rang the doorbell. After a while, the door opened, and we saw an old man with gray hair, wearing brown sweater and gray pants. He looked much older than my father, probably in his mid-70s, and slightly bent over. "Trick or treat," the kids shouted. The old man reached over with his left hand and dropped a few candies into Carlos's bag. It was then I noticed, and so did the kids, that the old man's right arm was missing. The sleeve of his brown sweater hung empty by his side. I'm a princess witch," Megan's voice was soft and squeaky. The old man reached over again and gave Megan a few candies. Then he turned his gaze to my son. "And what are you?" His deep, gravelly voice contained no joy. "A stinking kamikaze?" I flinched, but my son was unfazed. He said, "No, sir, I'm a ninja. Hi-ya!" The old man glared at my son for a few moments, then hissed, "Get out of here." He slammed the door with his left hand. What was that about? Carlos was mystified as we made our way back to Megan's house. Why didn't the old man give Charlie anything? "I don't know," Megan said. "I have only seen the old man once before. His name is Mr. Tarnowski or something." "Mom, what's a kamikaze?" my son asked. "It's kamikaze. It means spirit wind. But the old man was talking about the Japanese military pilots who did suicide attacks during World War II. What's a suicide attack?" Well, toward the end of the war, Japan was losing and they were desperate. So they made young pilots fly into American warships with a missile tied to the plane and with no fuel for returning. That's crazy, Carlos said. That's stupid, my son said. Crazy? Yes. Stupid? Yes. Sometimes in a war, you are forced to obey very stupid orders. Megan's house was aglow with orange lights from the plastic pumpkin lanterns. While we were gone, Karen had decorated her entire living room with black and orange balloons, rubber bats and spiders, and plastic skeletons, frosted cookies shaped like ghosts, and of course, more candies. Carlos's father was there too, wearing a Jason mask and a red tie. How was trick-or-treating? Karen asked. The one-armed man was mean to Charlie. Megan squinched up her green face. And he said some kind of a bad word. What? What happened? It's all right, Megan. I can explain, I said. You can go and play. So as we watched the kids play and gorge on candies, I explained to Karen what had happened. I'm so sorry that happened, Karen said. Joe Tarnowski is a veteran. He lost his arm during his service in World War II. I figured as much, I said. His wife passed away a while back. I met his daughter once and she told me. But she doesn't come around much, so Joe's all by himself. But I'm guessing he's doing all right. Carlos's father was teaching the kids how to carve their own pumpkins. This was so much fun, Megan sighed. Mom, I want to be a ninja next year. A girl can't be a ninja, Carlos said. Yes, she can, my son said. Right, Mom? Yes, there were lots of girl ninjas as well as boy ninjas in Japan hundreds of years ago. You mean ninjas were real? Megan was amazed. I thought they were fake, you know, like witches. Both witches and ninjas were real people with certain useful skills, I explained. If you really want to be a ninja next year, I will teach you how to make origami ninja stars. In that case, Carlos declared, I'll be a Jason ninja. So the following year, the three ninjas, well, including one with the Jason mask and the red tie, went around the same cul-de-sac trick-or-treating, except this time I was not allowed to come. My son absolutely forbade me from following them. So what I'm about to tell you is my son's account of what happened, verified by Megan, Carlos, Megan's mother Karen, and the police. They had decided ahead of time to skip Mr. Tarnowski's house altogether. I mean, their bags were more or less full of candies by the time they got near his house anyway. So they were walking by quickly on the sidewalk. It was then they smelled it, an acrid smell of burning metal. They looked and saw black smoke pouring out of a side window. Megan gasped and started to run, followed by Charlie and Carlos. The big bay window facing the street was curtained and dark. Megan rang the doorbell, but no one answered. What should we do? What should we do? Carlos's voice was rising in panic. Quick, Megan, go home and let your mother know. Ask her to call 911, my son said. But... Megan hesitated. You run faster than me or Carlos. Now hurry. Megan sprinted. Carlos kept banging on the front door. My son went around to the side window, which was halfway open. Through the smoke, he could see blackened kettle on the red hot electric stove. Beyond the kitchen in the dark, he saw a flickering blue light. He ran back to the front. Carlos said, maybe no one's home. He is home. The TV is on. Come on, we gotta keep banging. Mr. Tarnowski! Mr. Tarnowski! Still no answer. We gotta break this window, Charlie looked around and found a big flat stone. He picked it up with both hands and lifted it above his head, and just then, the door opened and the old man stumbled out, coughing violently, choking with smoke. He collapsed on the ground, gasping for air. "Mr. Tarnowski, are you all right?" The old man's glazed eyes opened and saw two ninjas, one with a Jason mask and a red tie, and the other one with a white hachimaki headband with the bright red sun in the middle of his forehead. As he lifted his only arm to reach for the boys, they could hear the sirens of ambulance and the fire truck approaching. Mr. Tarnowski was hospitalized for a few days, but he was all right. He had fallen asleep in front of a TV and forgot that he had put the kettle on. But the damage to the house was minimum too. About a week after the accident, a police officer called me, Karen, and Carlos's father, saying, "Joe Tarnowski and his daughter would like to know the names of the children who saved him. Do I have your permission?" Let me ask the kids, sir, and I will get back to you." Now, I was hoping that the kids would say yes so Mr. Tarnowski could thank them in person, but Charlie, Megan, and Carlos decided no. "But why not?" I asked my son. "Are you guys feeling too shy?" "No. Well, maybe Carlos is, but that's not why." "Then why don't you want Mr. Tarnowski to know who you are?" "I'm the ninja, remember?" My son laughed. "The way of shinobi, courage, honor, and wisdom. Always remain invisible. Never boast of your achievements, right? It's so much cooler to be remembered just as the three ninjas. Hi-ya!"
Three Ninjas by Motoko. And listening to this story reminds me of all the times when kids have made a difference in my life. And I'll tell you, that list is pretty long. And this may be just a tiny memory, but it's one of my favorites. A few years ago, I was on stage at a festival. I was telling stories and singing songs, playing the guitar. And I kind of get into it when I sing. I dance around a little bit on stage, and I'm really no dancer. But, you know, the music gets in you, doesn't it? And after one song, I said something into the microphone to the effect that while I like to dance around when I sing, I'm really no dancer. And right at that moment, before I could say another thing, before I could go on with the show, a little girl stood up in the audience. She was maybe four rows back, and she was maybe 7 years old. And she had her hair pulled back in a little ballerina bun. And in her tiny voice, she called out to me where I was standing on stage, and she shouted, "Anyone can be a dancer if only you believe in yourself." Well, the audience cheered, and I cheered too, and her mom hugged her. And after the show, I went down and met her, and we took a picture together. And that has come back to me at so many times, in so many ways. Times when I feel out of my depth, when I've taken on something that I don't know if I'm going to be good at, something at which I might fail. I think about it too when my kids embark on new adventures. My daughter went to college, and as she walked into that new experience, I found myself thinking on her behalf, anyone can be a dancer if only you believe in yourself. My son started a new business, and those words were again in my thoughts. And that little girl at the festival, if I've done the math right, is probably about to go to college herself. And as she goes forward into new adventures, I hope she remembers the things she said to me long ago. After all, in ways I never expected, it sure made a difference for me. That's where Motoko's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
Live the conversation is guaranteed when we listen to stories on the Appleseed. There's a lot coming up, but I wanted to take just a moment to let you know about another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The podcast is called Constant Wonder, and it's hosted by Marcus Smith. In each episode, Marcus takes you on kind of a quest to find the awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild. Not just interested in the natural world, interested in human nature as well. Marcus's guests tell fascinating stories and talk about experiences that have left them awestruck. You'll love the podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to Constant Wonder anytime you need a little dose of awe or wonder in your life. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio.
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the apple seed.
We're so glad to have you with us today on the apple seed. Motoko's story about three ninjas made us think of another story about a kid who made a difference when the stakes were high. And while Motoko's story had ties to World War II, this story takes place during World War II. It's a true story and is told for you by Pippa White, who tells remarkable stories from history, sometimes in the first person, as if she were those characters. This is one of those stories. Here's Pippa White with a story called 13-Year-Old Olaf, Freedom Fighter.
Important to all Norwegians during the war was simply information. We wanted to know what was happening in the Pacific and in the rest of Europe. This led to the creation of several illegal newsletters. Some brave person would listen to the BBC, copy everything down, then type it up in a newspaper format, run it off on a mimeo machine, and distribute these newsletters. Distribution fell to kids. My uncle on my mother's side created one of those newsletters, and so at an early age, I had a paper route. Incidentally, the punishment for being caught with even one illegal newspaper was death on the spot. One weekend, I had to bicycle out of the city a long way to a farm. The farmer and my dad were bartering. My dad was taking him potato mash and flour, and in return, we were going to get meat, cream, and grain. It was a long bike ride, so I had to stay the night at the farm. Next morning, I put into my rucksack the meat and the cream and the grain, and on top of that were 50 illegal newsletters. And then I made my way home. I'm telling you, it was a long bike ride. It was fall, and in Norway in the fall, it gets dark pretty early. And when it gets dark, it gets really dark. I was bicycling close to home. I was almost home. I was coming up on the intersection of Drammens Road and Church Road when my inner voice told me I shouldn't go there. I should just take the shortcut through my friend Barbro's yard. But I thought to myself, I'd have to get off the bike, push the bike uphill, go through two gates. Nah, it just seemed simpler to stay on the nice flat road. And then I saw it. A German checkpoint. They were in the dark, which is why I didn't see them, but they'd have seen my bicycle light, so there was no turning back now. Oh, this was very, very bad. I came to a stop. There were four soldiers. Lieutenant came out. There were three other soldiers. They all had rifles. The lieutenant had an automatic Schmeisser pistol. He said, "Well, well, well, young man. You have a very full rucksack there. Let us see what you have." And then he went back to talk to his friends. I got off the bike, put it on the kickstand, took my rucksack off, and I began to fiddle with the belt buckle. I bent the buckle as best I could. I stuck the belt under the flap. All I could do was stall. There was nothing else I could do but stall. I couldn't run. You can't outrun a bullet. I kept fiddling away there. Lieutenant came and said, "Oh, what, are you having trouble there?" And I said, "Yeah, the buckle's just a little bit bent, but I think I can take care of it, Lieutenant." He walked back away to his friends. He was polite and friendly, and I wanted to be as friendly as I could so as not to provoke him into any impatience. Anyway, I got the flap open, but then I started on the string of the rucksack. I made another knot in that. Then I began to fiddle with that. He came out, said, "Oh, now you're having trouble with the string there. Here, I have a penknife, and I have a flashlight. Let me do it for you." "Oh, please give me just 1 minute, Lieutenant. I really think I can get it if you'll just give me 1 minute." This was so bad. I was sweating profusely. Inside was not just the newsletters, but my ID card. It would give her address. We had a whole bunch more newsletters at home. This was so bad. And then I saw the three other soldiers with the rifles walk into the middle of the street, and I heard something. I turned around, and there came a big bus. The bus stopped in front of the soldiers. It was crowded. It was full of people and parcels and packages and suitcases. There were even people sitting on the top of the bus. The lieutenant took one look at it and said, "Oh, God in heaven, well, this is going to take us hours. Go on, get out, get home with you, go on. Oh, the work of this." I was only too happy to get back on my bike and pedal away. But this would have been really bad. Also in my rucksack was a letter from the farmer to my father. That farmer had a plant on his land. He was making Sten guns for the resistance. This was a very, very close call, and I realized I was only 13 years old at this point, but I knew too much. But I'd learned something else. I had learned that never ever again was I ever going to ignore that inner voice.
That was Pippa White with 13-year-old Olaf, freedom fighter. Did you ever have to stand up for something you felt was right, even if it scared you? Is there a hero in your life that you notice performing acts of kindness without recognition? Is there a kid who has made a difference in your life or the life of someone around you? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on a show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. Now, The Appleseed isn't just an audio podcast. We have a YouTube channel where you can watch our storytellers bring their stories to life in front of live studio audience. Just go to youtube.com and search for The Appleseed for videos and shorts to watch and share with the people you love. And don't forget to subscribe while you're there. We want to thank Motoko and Pippa White for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromarty. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, Stories for Better Bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed. I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with a lot of laughs along the way. Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.